Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast for the week of June 19th. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, U.S. Open in the books, LACC. We will dive into Wyndham Clark getting his second win in four starts. It feels like the summer of Wyndham. On to a little bit of golf happening in Michigan between the Michigan Open this past weekend as well as the Michigan Amateur taking place this week, started yesterday, Tuesday, June 20th. We had the LPGA playing in Grand Rapids at Blythefield Country Club. We will dive into results from that as well as the ladies' second major of the year, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Baltusrol. And finally, we will dive into another designated event. These guys, these dang tour players, have to just be tired as all hell. They are back at another designated event in Cromwell, Connecticut at the Travelers Championship all the way across the country. So we will get into a little bit of a preview for that. But first, Mr. Burkaw, Wyndham Clark takes down the likes of Roy McIlroy and I can't remember who else near the top of the leaderboard.
Ricky and Scotty.
Scotty obviously always there.
Xander Cam Smith backdooring his way in there.
He took down
some big names.
What can you say? I mean, that was a very, very impressive performance pretty much from start to finish.
So I will agree with an asterisk. I did not catch most of the coverage this weekend as I was out of the country, but I was doing my best to follow along with my 2 megabyte Wi-Fi, which allowed me to refresh Twitter occasionally throughout the day. But I did see a lot of people that weren't a huge fan of Wyndham. And I mean, I've watched the guy play before, so I know how he talks to his golf ball. I mean, he is the epitome of a guy who screams at his golf ball, but I don't mind him to that point. I'm okay with him. I think he's a good golfer. I think he has a good attitude. I don't know. I just don't understand why people get such a fuss about guys who yell at their ball. I think we all do it.
Yeah. I think we all do. Without even, I mean, self-consciously not even really realizing that we're doing it.
It's a natural reaction.
I think the toughest thing for Wyndham is who he was trying to beat. It's tough for America to root for Wyndham when you have Ricky Fowler trying to get his first ever major X amount of years into his career with a little bit of this resurgence that's happened over the last, what's now several months. I think it's going to be a lot easier to not root for Wyndham when you have even Rory trying to get his first major in what's getting close to a decade now.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. He basically had every allegiance against him because all of the, like, I don't know. I don't want to say like passive golf fans, but like, you know, of a lot of people that are just fans of Ricky just because he's like Ricky Fowler, maybe not necessarily Ricky Fowler, like the golfer. Mm-hmm. And then you also get the PGA fanboys who like are just dying to see Rory end this drought. And then on top of that, like I saw like some live accounts that were trying to get behind Wyndham. But then as soon as Cam Smith started to creep up there, then they obviously abandoned ship right away. So he was lacking in the support department for sure.
Yeah, which I think is just unfortunately the way the cookie crumbles. So we mentioned Cam Smith. I do want to just to round out the rest of the top five. We do have Wyndham obviously finished at 10 under to win. Roy McIlroy just could not get stuff going on Sunday. That was a ball striking clinic really all week. And just as the week went on, his putting just slowly declined. First round, he gained 2.74 strokes on the green. Second round, 1.89. Third round, lost 1.19. And then in the fourth round, he lost 2.25. strokes on the green. So that was, you mentioned it in our pre-show, that was the Open all over again. I mean, the guy can strike the ball to oblivion, but that putter just needs to cooperate. It kills me.
Yeah, and I think he even mentioned it in some interviews after, or maybe it was like to his caddy or something, but he was like, that was literally the Open all over again. Yeah. And it is, it's tough to watch. It's easy to relate to. I feel like, I mean, we've talked about it on this podcast, both of us, we've gone through putting yips. Maybe it's just being bad at putting, I don't know. But I think like the average golfer can relate to not making putts, right? Because there's plenty of dudes who can go out there and hammer the ball 280, whatever, you know, get decently close to the tour guys' yardages, but their abilities on the greens make them so much greater than the average, you know, amateur golfer. And so when we see guys miss putts, we can kind of relate with that, but it's hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. Especially because it's a lot of times for amateur golfers, we're three putting. Our miss putt is we're missing two putts. So our second, these guys are all, we were watching Rory hit it to 10 to 15 feet and just not being able to make really his moment that it felt like he was just letting it all go by the wayside was on hole 14, that par five, where he got a sensational break from a plugged ball in the bunker, the side of the bunker, and he was able to.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, you're way more. I was fine with that drop.
I hated that drop. What do you mean you were fine with that drop?
He wasn't in the bunker.
He wasn't plugged in a fairway either. But I have always interpreted that rule as like very soft ground. Ball plugs usually in the fairway. Ball, the entire surface of the ball is submerged below the surface of the ground.
Yeah, well, you may have misinterpreted the rule. I think
really,
it doesn't have to be the whole ball. I mean, it can be quite literally like four dimples of it. It could just be like,
no,
like an impression in the ground. Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, the ball buried in the ground. I don't.
We're gonna have to fact check that. I am. So then the divot rule, if that is the case, and I've just been misinterpreting that my whole life, the divot rule is the worst rule in golf. It's made it even worse for me now. The fact that if my ball just impressions in its own hole slightly, a quarter of the ball, and I can pull it out, but if I land it in Joe Schmo's beaver tail, I have to leave it in there.
Yes, that is exactly what has to happen. you nailed it.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, anyway, carry on. I was not a fan of the drop. I mean, if that is the rule, then that is the rule, and that's the rules of golf, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, and that's, I mean, the golf gods said no mas, because he ended up not getting up and down, still making a six. And he hit that ball where he did because he had a wedge in his hand hitting his third shot, and he can't even hit on the green. Frustrating stuff from Rory. And I know he's probably just as I'm sure he's more annoyed, obviously, than what we are with just his lack of performance coming down the stretch. Scottie Scheffler actually made some putts this weekend. That was impressive to see. Ball striking was not quite where it was these past couple weeks, so he finished in third, shot 70 in the final round. Cam Smith, 67 in the final round. He rattled off a couple birdies, like four in a row on Sunday on the back nine when everyone else was playing the back nine several over par, to the tune of, I have the stat right here. The first 10 holes, number 10 was pretty easy. The first 10 holes were played in plus 72. The final eight holes, 11 through 18, were plus 713. So a little bit of a difference there. And Cam Smith just, said that's no problem for me, and shot 32 on the backside, birdieing three holes, which was fairly impressive. Tommy Fleetwood shot 63 on the final round. Minwoo Lee is going to win here soon, a big event. I think he has so much ball speed. His swing is so good. He finished T5th, struggled on Saturday, shot 74 on Saturday, bounced back with a 67 on Sunday. And then to round out the top five, poor Ricky Fowler. really was put in a position to finish what he started and close with a 75, unfortunately. Which leads me to Saturday night. You were probably bandugling around BVI, so I'm not sure you were privy to this information. They teed those guys off on Saturday at, it was 6:30, I think, or 6:40 Eastern time. So whatever, that would make it 3:30-ish.
Yep.
In California. That only leaves them, if they play in 4 hours, it only leaves them like a half hour of daylight, I think is what I saw. Ricky makes a bogey on 18 from 4 feet, four or five feet. And I am 100% saying it's because it was darn near pitch blackout.
Well, and he's, especially for him, who is very open about, he like needs to wear those glasses to play.
Yeah.
They're like, it's special prescription sunglasses or whatever.
So, I mean, the USGA, bunch of doofs. I know they're just money hungry. I understand TV contracts and wanting to the primetime East Coast tee these guys off an hour before primetime starts and get the meat of it. But holy moly, guys, there's like 70 players. They didn't start anybody until noon, I think. It was ridiculous. I don't get it. That would severely annoy me. And I saw people on Twitter saying, well, why don't they're twosomes, why don't they just play in under 4 hours? It's like, well, that never happens. So it's not like it's just going to start happening now.
Yeah. They also forget that there's like bunches of other groups out there. And not only that, this course was not set up well for pace of play.
No,
there was that three hole stretch where there's a Brooks group at one point waited on the tee on what hole was it? I don't even remember. We waited on the tee for like 20 minutes to tee off.
Yeah, it was probably seven, because you go from drivable par 4-6 to a par 3-7th to a drive or a get into par 5-8th.
And so but in par 3, which is like 300 yards.
Yeah, every reason to stand still pretty much.
Yeah. So, to your point earlier, I did not watch. Saturday night was the night of the wedding. So I was bondoogling, as Hunter likes to say. but I did see player reactions that were unhappy, Wyndham being one of them, that was pretty open about, like, we were playing in the dark. I just have to say that this whole coverage of this event was awful. Their tee times were awful. How many stinking commercials were there? At one point, it was over double the amount of time as last year.
Thursday, Friday, and into Saturday were all just, it was really atrocious in every sense of the word. I don't get it.
I'm watching highlights on Twitter that have commercials on them. I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is like a huge moment, and you've got friggin' Chick-fil-A on the side or something. I don't know. Yeah, it's just like
NBC really fumbled the bag a little bit, it feels like, which is unfortunate, because the PGA, was like ESPN and Turner. I thought that was a fairly well done. I felt like there weren't as many commercials. And the worst part about it is Mike Wan from the USGA, the CEO, is saying how there's going to be like 35% less commercials this year. And I think he just truly meant that there'd be less singular commercials, but they'd just be longer. They'd just be like longer commercials. So there would be less commercials, but they would just be longer in length. He kills me.
I don't know if we just want to segue this into just the overall U.S. Open rant or not, but
fire away. Floor is yours. My notes say Brad gets his few minutes to rant about LACC and all things LACC.
So I appreciate this time. I need this not only for my sanity, but for many other things. I am so incredibly disappointed in how this event was handled from a logistics standpoint by the USGA. The field itself was great. The competition was great. I'm not saying anything poor. Like, the leaderboard was exciting. You know, we had Ricky Fowler in the mix for the first time in ever. But if you don't want to host a major, don't host a major. Nobody like came to LACC with a gun and pointed it at all the members' heads and said, you guys have to host this open. That's just not how it goes. To have rumors coming out of members buying tickets so that they can restrict the number of people walking on the course is pathetic. The USGA's lack of response to that is very indicative that it's true. And not only that, to play the event where the initiation fee alone, I've heard numbers around $500,000, to play that event at our country, or to play our country's Open at that venue, is pathetic. There's no other way to put it. It's pathetic. And I absolutely love the real open across the pond, laying the salt on the wound last night by, did you see their tweet they sent out that they it was just a picture of the course and it said everybody's course or something, or course for everyone or something like that. I love it.
No,
I love it.
I mean, very accurate.
Very accurate.
I do know how you're not mad. You're disappointed.
I'm not mad. I could never be mad at the USGA. I am super parent. Disappointed.
Disappointed parent. I will say, so quickly, everything you just said, I'm completely on board with. Makes total sense. I don't think everyone on Thursday and Friday was saying how this golf course like does not deserve to host an open. That's a joke. Like we saw the 262s on Thursday, two records that have been standing for like a long time, a record that's been standing for a long time. We get two of them in the same day, and I think everyone was pretty quick to overreact. I think it held up well. It was just tough for that first couple days when that marine layer just wouldn't go away. Another thing about the USGA, like, why are you playing a golf tour? If we don't know, from every account that I saw, the California people were like, well, it's always cloudy in June. Like, that, this is June. This is the, I think I heard June gloom was what I kept hearing. If you knew that was the case, like, and you know you can't get this course as firm as you want it to, then why are we playing here? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this in June?
Yeah, and I think that brings up a good point, because I have no qualms with the actual golf course itself outside from the private aspect of it. Like, if that was a public golf course, I think that it's a beautiful golf course. It's challenging. We saw that it can be challenging. So I have no qualms with that. It's the fact, it's the logistics, it's the USGA, it's the members, it's that side of it that it turned into, and I saw this a lot online, they called it like the corporate open. It felt very corporate-y.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When you picture US Open, you picture the Open, I mean, just really any major championship, you picture like seven or eight people deep on each side of the tee box, behind the tee box, and you just got none of that this weekend. None of it. I understand you have to have the relationship with the USGA and NBC. Dan Hicks can do you know what. I don't know what Dan Hicks could do, but he had the chance. He had Mike Wan on the television and had a chance to be like, hey, like, where is everybody? Like, why is there nobody here? And he just didn't do that. He was praising on his hands and knees, praising Mike Wan and the USGA for such a great tournament.
It's like, you know who probably sent him a text after saying that was a really good interview is Marty Smith.
Yeah, probably Marty Smith. Yeah, that's probably exactly what happened. So do you think, a couple more points in the US Open, was that a sufficient rant? Because we'll just continue the rant here. I have a couple more. Do you think we'll be back in 2039?
I hope not. I sincerely hope the USGA strongly reconsiders having that venue host again.
And I think to that point about how far away, like just looking at, so this is, we're in 2023. That's 16 years away. I could see a world a lot of times where the members that vote to have this tournament here or have the U.S. Open at LACC are no longer there when it actually comes. You know what I'm saying? Like these, this happens 20 years ago. They vote to play the U.S. Open at LACC, and then all these members find the other side of the ground, and these new members are like, "Well, we don't want this."
Yeah, and I mean, without, I mean, obviously, I don't know their membership structure, but if it's anything similar to like Bayview, the older you are, the more say you generally have, and so yeah, that's a good point.
Do you think do you think the lack of crowd helped Wyndham?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
I don't think he wins if it's like a U.S. Open. He struck it so well, but on Sunday where he had a couple wayward shots where he had to get up and down from a couple of sweet spots. Like if you have those 5-6 people deep around each green, each one of those holes, like that's going to take a toll on you at some point.
But, well, and you could tell he was a little rattled. Oh, yeah. In that back nine, I mean, he had the two bogeys and he sprayed his drive on 18. So, yeah, I mean, intensify that crowd by, I mean, that was what, half the normal people?
I don't know what the exact, so I want to say I saw like,
I mean, it varies by venue, but
9,000 GA tickets. I assume that was for per day.
Half of which were gobbled up by the LACC members.
Crazy. So just a final point on just in regards to Wyndham and his recent kind of up really fast track to stardom. In his first 133 starts, zero wins, he made a cool $7.4 million, but he'd never finished inside the top 75 in any of his six major starts. And now in his last four wins, he's made $7.6 million. He has the U.S. Open, won the Wells Fargo. Not a bad little stretch he's on, and I think has a lot to do with his strokes gained and approach. His iron game has become one of his strongest suits. He was pretty below average last year. He was losing about half a shot per round strokes gained approach, and now he is in the top five. He's gaining almost a shot per round around the greens. So what a dramatic difference that would make, huh? I mean,
it's a meteoric rise for him. And I don't know what made me think of this, but I don't know, did you see, was he using the same putter as Ricky?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He tried Ricky's out, and that's what made him want to get that putter. Wasn't that the story?
Oh yeah, yep. That was the new hot topic of the. And I saw on eBay those putters were going for like an incredibly large amount of money.
Is that a model they don't make anymore? I didn't even look into it. I just saw something on Twitter that was like, Wyndham's draining all the putts that Ricky's missing with his own putter or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Two more stats for you from Justin Rose, then we'll move on. 271 final score from Rory McIlroy is the lowest 72 holes total for U.S. Open to not win. So I found that sad in a way. And then also another sad Rory stat, 59 greens of regulation for this week is the most by any player in U.S. Open history that did not win. So he can ball strike. Nobody said he can't. Nobody's saying he can't. Let's move on to the 112th Michigan Amateur. That's at Oakland Hills Country Club, the North Course. We are through one day. It's June 20th through the 24th, I believe. Through one day, Patrick Deardorff is leading the event at 3 under par. He shot 67. Coulter Smith shot 68. Lorenzo Pinelli, who just won the high school state championship for, I believe that was Division III, shot 1 under 69. Bradley Smithson from Michigan State shot 69. Charles DeLong, who plays for Grand Valley, shot 69. Colin O'Rourke also shot 69. Then just round out the 70s, we had Anthony Comito August Mikoff, also from Michigan State, Colin Sikanga, Sikaga, and Loon Jones also finished at 70. So we'll keep you up to date on the Michigan Amateur as it finishes up next week. Moving on to the Michigan Open, which took place this past weekend, Joseph Jurek from Dearborn Heights, who has some Canadian tour status, won the event at 12 under par. I believe it was not quite wire to wire, but he shot 67, 67, 69, 69 to win by two over James Holly. Charles DeLong, once again, busy couple weeks for him. He shot 10 under to finish T2nd. And Tyler Kopp, who Brad mentioned is the brother of Andrew Kopp, who plays for the Red Wings, is 9 under par, auto block, 8 under par. And rounding out the top six, we had Matt Thompson finish 6 under and Barrett Kelpin finished 6 under. So a nice little payday for Joseph. I believe he won $12,000. So not a bad week of golf. Moving on to the women's side of the game, they were at Blythefield Country Club down in Grand Rapids, pretty darn close to Mr. Burkaw's house. How far is that?
Oh, man, it's about 5-10 minutes.
Have you ever played there?
Nope, I have not had the opportunity. I need to try to get a buddy with somebody who's a member there.
Yeah, that would not be so always a a very looked forward to event from the ladies. I think Meyer does a great job with from hospitality to just the player arrangements, things like that. Meyer, from what I hear, always does a fantastic job. The winner of that event was Leona McGuire. She shot 21 under par. Aria Duanagon shot 19 under par, and then Xiu Lin shot 18 under par. Amy Yang round out the top three at 18 under par as well. They are on to their second major of the year. That's the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. That's at Baltusrol in northern New Jersey. Pretty historic club, hosted 17 major championships in its 125-year history, 7 U.S. Opens, 2 Women's U.S. Opens, 2 PGA Championships, and now obviously the Women's PGA Championship. Just had a Gil Hanse redesign or revamp here in the last couple of years, so looking forward to that. I believe coverage for that is, if I can quickly pull it up, which I cannot. I have to imagine Peacock and, yep, so first round is on the Golf Channel as well as Peacock. Second round, Golf Channel, Peacock, and then into some NBC coverage for the final two rounds from 3-6 on Saturday and 2-6 on Sunday. So check that out, because Baltusrol is a sweet place, and I'm sure it's going to look great with the revamp. So that is your preview of the recap and preview of the ladies' side of things. Move on to the Travelers.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
as mentioned in the intro, these poor PGA Tour players. I mean, I thought it'd be kind of fun to be a PGA Tour player at one time or another. But now they're just traveling all over the country for another designated event. This one's in Cromwell, Connecticut, at the TPC River Highlands, which is in Hartford, Connecticut.
And also just about as far away from Los Angeles as you can get.
Yeah. So pretty two contrasting golf courses here. Obviously, the North Course was measured at about 7,400 yards. TPC River Highlands will peak out at about 6,800 yards. There are 10 of the 12 par fours at TPC River Highlands are under 450 yards in length. So, I mean, couldn't be more different than LACC in every sense of the word. Pretty basic two par fives for a par 70, two par fives, four par threes, and 12 par fours. As far as, do you want to go through the odds board real quick? Have you ever pulled up?
Yep, I can do that.
Go ahead.
So to no surprise, Scotty Scheffler is the favorite to win this week at 6-1. Right behind him, both at 11-1, we have Patrick Cantlay and John Rahm. 12-1, Rory McIlroy. 14 is Xander. 18, we've got Victor. 22, Colin Morikawa. 30, we've got Tony Finau. And I will end it here at Tommy, Mr. 63. He is 33-1 this weekend. There is, however, a name that I want to mention that is 65-1
Whoa.
This weekend.
Whoa.
Yes. Now, I just said 65-1, and the name that I'm going to say is probably going to surprise you, but his first name starts with a J and his last name starts with a T.
Oh.
Justin Thomas.
I thought you said his last name. Oh, you said the last name started with a T. I thought you said
starts with a T. Yeah, sorry.
Yes. Well, that's crazy. That's a crazy pick. 65-1 might be the highest, the longest odds of Justin Thomas's career.
Ever. It has to be. I'd actually be curious to know what that would be, because it has to be up there.
Yeah, that's...
For a course like this?
Yes. So just to give you a little quickly a past winners, because I'm trying to find a story here and there might not be one, because these are some very sporadic names. I can't tell what type of player plays well here looking at these. So Xander Schauffele won in 2022, Harris English in 2021. This is where it gets a little weird. Dustin Johnson in 2020, Bubba Watson in 2019, Jordan's no event in 2018. I'm not entirely sure if that was why that was. Maybe something to do with the playoffs. For some reason, that rings a bell. 2017 was, I believe that was Jordan's chip-in year in the playoff. Russell Knox in 2016. Bubba Watson won in 2015 as well. And then Kevin Streelman makes sense. Ken Duke, Mark Leishman, Bubba Watson again in 2010. So just from just knowing a little bit about the course, it seems like it's going to benefit guys that are pretty straight and can make a lot of birdies.
Because those are
some fairly low numbers. Let me see. I mean, those are, I guess it's actually not as low as what I was thinking. It's middle, so 19 under last year from Xander, but then 19 in 2022, but then we're more in like the 13, 14, 12, 15 range.
I think this course often gets I don't want to say a bad rep, but people just always think of 58 because of Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, it can allude to it maybe being easier than it actually is. Not to say that it's like super, super challenging, but it's not like a, I don't know. It's not like a,
I don't think it's going to like, it's a hard golf course if you're not hitting it straight, but that might feel like that's any golf course where I don't think you're going to like you're not going to be mentally exhausted from playing this where there are courses.
So in looking up this event this week, like every year Jim Furyk's 58 comes up, but somehow this has slipped past me in all these years. Do you know who held the record at this course before Jim Furyk?
Patrick Cantlay?
Yes.
Yeah.
As an amateur.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he was 19.
Yes. Not too bad. That was my like one and only play this week and was him. I think, I mean, just looking at his past success here, he's 5-for-5 since 2018 with a T11, two T13s, two T15s. I mean, he has a scoring average of like almost 67.5. Insanely good.
And what did I say he was at? He's at 11-1 this week.
Yeah, that is that is a tough one to bite on, but I do not hate it. I think you have to think about maybe this week more than ever is just who like truly loves the game of golf. Like you better really like the game of golf to be out there giving it your all after 4 days at LACC and then flying all the way across the country.
And you know who I think fits that mold? I think Patrick Cantlay does fit that mold, but I also think Victor Hovland fits that mold.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Patrick doesn't. I don't know if he likes golf. I think he's just a robot.
He might not like anything.
He was programmed to like golf.
Yeah. He doesn't like or dislike anything.
No. And speaking of loving golf, I think you always hear all of the rumors about like John Rahm not being able to take a day off. I expect him to come out here and play well this week. He hasn't been to TPC River Highlands since 2022, but I think a California event in Los Angeles, I think a T10th, even though it was a T10th, is a fairly disappointing score for John at the U.S. Open, or rather a disappointing result. And that was pretty backdoored. I mean, he shot 65 on Sunday. So he doesn't do that, and he's more in like that 20 to 30 range. So that's a guy I would expect to get out of bed this week.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he struggled with his putter a little bit, so look to see him rebound there.
Yes. What do you think? So I think Tom Kim is a name that is coming to mind. So he just tamed a pretty long golf course, a pretty big boy golf course. That's always been his thing, is he just doesn't hit as long as these guys. But if he's able to do that at LACC coming off a T8th, he's still young and spry. I expect him to perform pretty well on being a ball striker that he is.
Yeah, that's another name. There's just so many. There's actually a lot of good ball strikers in this week, but that's a name I was keeping an eye on. Corey Connors, your boy, another one. See if he can
bounce back, because he missed the damn
bounce
cut.
Bounce back. He did miss the cut, but he still ball strikes with the best of them, so never count him out.
Nope.
And then Tommy, Tommy Fleetwood. Somebody made a joke. And I'm going to tell this so poorly now, I'm just going to totally botch it. There's some joke going around where like one of the video games for their sound effects used Tommy Fleetwood hitting six irons for the game effects or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. See, I botched it. I knew I was going to botch it, but it was funny at the time when I read it. Just moral of the story, though, is that Tommy Fleetwood hits the crap out of his irons.
Yes, he does that drill that where he puts like he essentially puts something on the toe of his club and something on the heel of his mm-hmm. club and gives himself not even like a quarter of an inch on either side. So he just has to strike it right on plane every time. And he flushes the ball. It is fun to watch. He is becoming really good at these low rounds on Sunday. It'd be a shame if he could just do it the first couple of days and put himself in position where when he goes out there and shoots his 63s and his 65s that he wins.
Yeah, he does. He seems to just get off to a slow start, and it makes you wonder what if there's layers to that, you know, if it's like how he preps for the week, if he maybe doesn't prep as much and he's just getting into the groove as the rounds go on. I don't know, but he does seem like a Sunday superhero this year.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to think of what event it was. So he has, like, it's becoming a running joke now, where he shot a 63 in another major. I want to say it was at the Open, maybe, on Sunday, and similar thing where he backdoor his way into a top five. Looks good in the history books.
Yeah, he gets that that yellow square on mm-hmm. Wikipedia, as Tron Carter likes to say.
Yep. I don't have a ton of other names. I fully expect, given the fact that Harris English played fairly well at the U.S. Open coming in T8th, just struggled a little bit on either. It was one of the days on the weekend. He had himself in a decent spot going into it, but he's with his past success here, I fully expect him to play very well this week. I mean, he won in 2021. He's logged five top 15s since the Genesis Invitational earlier this spring. So he is trending, as they say.
He's on the Data Golf Trend Index.
Yes, he's on the up and up. All right, well, if that's all from the Travelers, we got to talk. So I came to Brad yesterday or 2 days ago, and I asked him how he held his putter grip because I was just curious. I've always held it. I hold my club interlocked, but I hold my held my putter overlap for what I would have guessed would be my whole career playing golf. I don't think I've ever changed grips. I don't think. But anyways, I was just looking online, and I was like, what grip did Tiger Woods use? And he does the reverse overlap is what it's called. So essentially you put your, rather than putting your left pointer finger over top of your right hand, right? No, you're putting it, rather than putting it under your right hand, you're actually putting it over your right hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the idea of it being that then at that point, both of your palms, your right palm is pressing against the right side of the putter and your left palm is pressing against the left side of the putter. Both thumbs are on top of the grip. And Brad, it is amazing. I don't know what's going to happen today, because yesterday, maybe just yesterday, was honeymoon time, whatever they call it. But even if I didn't make it, the ball just rolled very true. It from long distance, the ball just, and it is allowing me to keep my putter a lot lower to the ground going back and through, which is something I've struggled with in the past. But before, where I would take it back and that thing would just wobble around, do its own little thing. And now it just feels like that thing's on like a steel beam and it's just rocking back and forth. Shocking.
It's funny how these pros, like, they must know something, right? I've been pretty open on the podcast about just how god awful I've putted. For example, I've posted around this year where I have shot a 79 with 39 of those strokes being putts. So bad putter. So when Hunter sent this to me, I was like, I'll try anything. I'll do voodoo magic at this point. You want me to light candles and do a dance? Sure.
I did love before you say more that you were like quickly, you were like, well, I'm not going to, I mean, it's better than the claw. It's like, well, I'm not sure we should start being picky now. I think we ought to try whatever can work.
It is fair. That is a very fair point to make. And there's nothing against the claw grip. There's plenty of professionals that use the claw grip and are amazing putters. I have a friend that uses the claw grip and he's a way better putter than I am. So, but for me, it's just never felt like a natural way to putt. So I've always needed to have that traditional grip on the putter. So I was very reluctant to change that. I did not want to go to any sort of like arm lock or any sort of claw, but this reverse overlap is a traditional grip in the sense it literally, all that changed is the positioning of my index finger on my left hand. But for me, I feel like I am just one, my hands mold into one unit when I do that. And it's so consistent, so straight through. And to your point earlier, I played yesterday as well, and I putted just the best I've put in who knows how long, probably ever, to be quite honest. And to your point, there were definitely putts that I missed, but I hit my line.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing. I'll miss putts if I misread and I miss it, then I'll live with that. Like, that's just part of, you know, people, you can misread a green, you know, it is at the end of the day, just a piece of grass, you know, that you're hitting a ball on. But what makes me really mad is when I miss my line, and if I would have hit my line, it would have gone in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
no,
you know,
frustrating.
I know I'm preaching to literally anybody who's listening to this is probably like, well, yeah, idiot. That's like every one of us. But We're getting it's progressions. We have to get there. You know, the first step is admitting you have a problem.
Yeah, which I think we have both conquered the first step, and now we're trying to find solutions.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I think.
Yep. And I think the second step is like acknowledging that a power greater than you can fix you, and that's where I am. I am acknowledging that there is a power greater.
I am helpless.
Yes.
Well, we were, but now we're not. We're fixed.
Now we're not.
We're fixed.
We're fixed.
We're fixed. Yep. At the end of the day, we are fixed.
Yes, of course.
All right. Well, that's. I just wanted to quickly touch on that. Maybe if any of our listeners have not, just look it up and see. I was pleasantly surprised. I needed something, and it is really the first thing I found in a while that feels really, really good. So yeah. worth checking out.
I would have to agree for sure. And related to that, I've been watching a lot of Brad Faxon YouTube videos. He is phenomenal. Yes. And he also uses the reverse overlap. So if you're interested, check out his video on it. And then he also does videos on reading greeds and stuff. And they're really good.
Yeah. No, that would be, I think that's where a lot of people struggle is actually reading the greens, especially if you're somebody that's like a weekend warrior or plays a lot of different places and travels around, like the going from whether it be different speed greens to different obviously different breaks on different courses, it's a nice tool to have.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just really quickly, I think a lot of people don't understand their strengths and weaknesses in putting. And when I say that, I mean like, so I think of like for you, for example, aren't you like, are you right eye dominant?
Left,
or are you
left eye dominant?
You're left eye dominant, which most right-handed people are right eye dominant, right?
Yes.
So like just knowing that, you, I'm assuming, have to change your approach to how you putt.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, you know, weekend warriors, like you mentioned, might not know those kinds of things. So it is amazing when you unlock that and you figure out like, oh, I'm better at seeing in straight lines as opposed to curves or, you know, whatever it may be. So.
Yeah, and I would take all of that, what Brad just said, with a grain of salt, because once you realize that there's more to it than just going out there and hitting it, you're going to be miserable. You're going to be miserable.
It's true. It's very true. It is true. Proceed with caution.
Yes. Yeah, we'll put a disclaimer on this episode. I don't want to get sued. Great Lakes Golf Podcast goes under.
Soliciting poor advice.
All right, I think that's all I have. Good luck to the ladies this week at Baltusrol for their second major of the year, and then also the guys at another designated event at the Travelers. And then also Michigan Amateur, we'll keep an eye on that.
All righty, have a good weekend, everybody.
Talk to you guys.